See, when somebody is in trouble, then we say, please tolerate it. They say, why should you tolerate it? Because there is no alternative. There is no solution for the problems in this world except tolerance. Tolerance is the solution. If you try to find some solution to the problems in this world, then that solution itself will be a bigger problem. You need to tolerate the solution too. So, trying to find out some solutions to the material platform is just foolishness. That is why Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, the problem is not in the world, the problem is with you, that you don't have the knowledge. That is why the solution to the problem is tolerate. Matra sparshastu konteya sita ushna sukhadukhada agama paayana anitya stantikshasya bharata. He says that matra sparsha. Last time we discussed how in this world there is always some interaction between the senses and the object of the senses. Matra means tanmatras, which are like five. For every sense there is sense object. For the nose it is a smell, for the tongue it is a taste, for the eyes it is a form, for the skin it is a touch, and for ear it is a sound. So these are known as the tanmatras, matra. And sparsha means what? Sparsha means the contact, or in coming in touch with. So when the senses come in touch with in contact with the sense objects, there are two feelings which come. If some desirable objects come in contact with your senses, then it gives happiness. If undesirable objects come in contact with the sense objects, then it gives rise to suffering. So matra sparshastu kaunteya sita ushna sukha dukkhada. These sukha and dukkha, they are compared to what? Like the seasons. Sometimes the winter comes, now it's winter, after some time summer comes. So in this way it goes on changing. So indirectly Krishna is telling Arjuna, my Arjuna, you need to tolerate both happiness and misery. Why? If you are very happy, don't worry, misery is going to come. If you are miserable, don't worry, happiness is going to come. So in both circumstances, actually what we experience is misery only, so we need to tolerate. Some people say, why are you saying that we need to tolerate happiness? The reason we need to tolerate happiness is that if you are not tolerating happiness, you cannot tolerate misery. Because actually, the moment we experience some kind of happiness or some kind of sukha, it is actually the forgetfulness of the misery. If not now, which is going to come in future. Like everybody is very happy. Everybody is enjoying the party going on. Now as soon as the party is going on very nicely, somebody comes and tells, within 1 hour there is going to be earthquake. Earthquake is after 1 hour, no? No, let us enjoy. Will anybody enjoy? Nobody can enjoy. So actually, every happiness situation, the happy situation, is actually what? It's just waiting for misery. We don't know, we forget that the misery is going to come. That is why we try to enjoy. So trying to enjoy this world is actually foolishness. As much as a person who is having a party when earthquake is going to come an hour later. So that is why Krishna says that tolerate. Matra sparshastu kaunteya sita ushna sukha dukkhada agama paayana anityastam titikshasya bharata titikshvaha. Last time, if you remember, we discussed how tolerance is the topmost quality in a man. Ability to tolerate provoking circumstances is the greatness of a person. Greatness of a person is measured by his ability to tolerate provoking circumstances. So now, we judge person's greatness by what? He's a great singer. Oh, he's a very rich person. He's a great builder. Oh, he's a great fighter. Oh, he's a great cricket star. But greatness is not measurement of one's abilities. But greatness is one's ability to tolerate miserable or provoking circumstances. Now somebody may say, how long should I tolerate? Point is, at the moment you say how long you should tolerate, that means you are not tolerating. Because tolerance is actually a natural outcome of understanding of the nature of this world. So some people think, no, I'm just tolerating, as if they fold their fist and just tolerate. Actually, they are not tolerating. Tolerance doesn't come by some artificial imposition of some kind of sense control. No. It should be a natural outcome of knowledge. When somebody knows that this is what it is, when somebody knows the truth, we tolerate it. Now somebody may say, what is the result of tolerance? 15th verse Krishna says, Emhina Vatantyate Purusham Purusharsva Sukadukka Sukam Sukadukka Samam Deeram Samritatvaya Kalpate Sukadukka Samasukka Sukad Deeram Sabadukka Sukam Deeram Samritatvaya Kalpate. A person who is tolerating, what does he achieve? Amrutatvaya Kalpate. Amrutatva means what? Amrutatva means eternity or liberation. Now regarding that, last time we discussed about a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam which talks about three practical aspects of what we should do to achieve liberation. Tattena kampansa samikshamano bunjanam eva atmiktam vipakam ridvagupya vidham namaste jivetayo mukti pade sudhaya bhag. So the first point is tolerance in this verse. Tattena kampansa samikshamano tatte anukampa. Tat means Supreme Lord. Anukampa means mercy. So, waiting for the mercy of the Lord, what is the first thing? Now, while we are waiting for the mercy of the Lord, naturally so many miseries come, so many happiness, misery, all these things come, then what tolerate? The second point is, whatever I have done in the past, they are now coming as happiness or distress, let them come. Whatever I have done in the past, let them come. Yadavyam tadavantu bhagat purakarmana rupam. Whatever misdeeds I have done in the past, the good deeds I have done in the past, let them come as happiness and misery, I am not bothered about it. The third point is, Hrit Vaga Vividham Namaste. It means by heart, by mind, the body and mind and speech. What we should do? What should the Supreme Lord? When we do this, liberation becomes such a person's rightful claim. Mukti Pade Sadhaya Bhava. Like for a son to get the property of his father, he just had to wait for some time, that's all. He didn't have to do anything. Automatically, the property becomes his rightful claim. In the same way, for a person, a devotee, who is conducting life, accepting these three as the principles, always wait for the mercy of Krishna. Number two is, when miseries come, just think that it is my past misdeeds and tolerate. Number three is, worship the Supreme Lord, one's ability, by body, mind and speech. If somebody does it, liberation is guaranteed. Liberated, you don't have to achieve, you don't have to do any endeavor to achieve that liberation. That comes to you automatically. So these are the points which we discussed last time. Now, Krishna, he starts speaking to Arjuna elaborately about body and soul. In a gist, he has spoken about the distinction between body and soul in the 11th, 12th and the 13th verse. He gave a brief idea, what is soul, what is eternity, what is temporary. In this way he starts speaking. But the real knowledge about the soul and the body, the distinction between knowledge and body and soul, he starts speaking from the 16th verse. So the 16th verse is as follows. Nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha ubhayor vidrashtontastvanayo tattva darshini. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport. Now, the Krishna begins his knowledge about the soul. This is the beginning of the instruction by the Lord, by the living entities who are bewildered by influence of ignorance. Now, what is that ignorance? The ignorance is to consider something temporary to be permanent. Without knowing the distinction between temporary and permanent, we consider temporary to be permanent and permanent to be temporary. So that is our problem. That is called ignorance. Asat grahat. Asat means what? Asat means temporary. Rahat means what? You have accepted something temporary to be permanent. That is the problem. This world is temporary. Not only this world is temporary, this body is temporary, and the things which belong to this body, everything is temporary. And happiness which you get out of this body and the related things, it's all temporary. Now we are in pursuit for what? In pursuit of something permanent. So in pursuit of something permanent, we are accepting things which are temporary permanent. That's foolishness. So everybody wants some permanent nature. We all want to be permanent. Everybody wants a permanent job, permanent house, permanent partner, permanent friend, Who doesn't want anything permanent? Everybody wants permanent. Nobody wants anything temporary. That itself is a proof that the soul is eternal. What is the proof that eternity is the soul? Because that is what we want. That is what is our desire, that we always want something permanent. When you build a house, you feel, I'm going to permanently stay in this house. When you get married, you feel that I'm going to permanently stay with this person. When you love each other, when you love somebody, you say, permanently we should be together. We should not leave. We should, permanent nature should be there. Now this is known as Vaikuntha Brahma. To consider that there is some permanent situation in this world is known as Vaikuntha Brahma. Brahma means illusion. It's a big illusion that we think that our situation is permanent. That is why we try to extract some happiness, some pleasure out of things what we have. Extract happiness from situations we get. Extract happiness through the people whom around us. As I just know a few minutes back, the moment we know that the things what we have around us, I am going to lose it, then you cannot enjoy it. The very thing that makes us enjoy a particular thing is because we think, we have invest our faith in that it is going to be with me always. Otherwise, you will not enjoy. Say for example, this body. We are trying to enjoy this body. Say for example, today night we go and watch TV. Now, just imagine, if at that time you get a report from the doctor, you have done for some blood test or some test, you have got it, and then you get a report saying that tomorrow morning you will be dying, you will die. Will you watch TV? No. You will not watch TV. People talk about, there is no enjoyment in this world, but that is not going to go get out of our consciousness. The tendency to enjoy matter doesn't get out of our consciousness until unless we are self-realized about this one aspect of the truth. What is that? That this world is temporary. Until unless we understand everything is temporary, it is very difficult to get out of this tendency to enjoy. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that this world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. Now, this world is dukkhalayam. Even though you go on telling people, this world is dukkhalayam, everywhere there is misery, everywhere there is misery, people think it is for others, not for me. It is for others, it is not for me. Isn't it? As soon as you somebody comes to the hospital, then they see all the patients, they see how miserable he is. Isn't it? But he thinks, that person thinks, I am healthy, I am fine. At that time, somebody calls and says, how are you? He says, fine, thank you. So he doesn't even understand that I can also be at that place. Within no time, who knows? Anybody can be in that position. And we try to show compassion, just see what has happened. I was driving, somebody was driving in the car. And then there was a very horrible accident in the road. And person was this, like lying and struggling like anything. Because like police was there, ambulance had all come. The big accident. And the person was next to me was telling, let's see. How bad, I feel so bad. Then I told him, see, hope somebody also feels bad about us also someday. when we may meet the accident, who knows? So at that time, naturally this mind, conditioned mind thinks that this is for somebody else. Misery is for somebody else, it is not for me. Oh, in stock market we find somebody has lost a lot of money. This person feels, oh, my money is safe. He doesn't know that his money may also be lost. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a goat. There is a goat, many goats are tied up in a line and they are all eating grass very happily. And one slaughterhouse person, he comes and cuts one of the goat's neck. Other goat is watching, he died, I am happy, I am having my grass. He doesn't know that next the sword is going to fall on his neck. He doesn't understand. That is called goat consciousness. So everybody is having this goat consciousness, thinking that this world is permanent. The situation what I have is permanent. That is why we try to enjoy. The very nature of this enjoyment in our consciousness is because we have not understood the temporary nature of this world. That is why it is described that there are two kinds of brahmas, two kinds of illusions. One is known as Vaikuntha Brahma, other is known as Ananda Brahma. Vaikuntha Brahma means what? To to be illusion that my situation and my situation in this world is permanent. And why Ananda Brahma means to think that I am going to get some eternal happiness, Ananda, or I am enjoying. That is another Brahma. So these two kinds of Brahmas can only be removed when we have this knowledge. What is that knowledge? The knowledge of the distinction between body and soul, Sat and Asat. That is why the first teaching which is given to any kid in this world, any kid in the Vedic system of education is Asatoma Asatgamaya, Tamasoma Dhotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amrutangamaya. Just see, this is the thing which is taught to a baby who has just got its Aksharabhyasa ceremony. After the Aksharabhyasa, they write poem, or sometimes some people say Hare Krishna, some people say Jai Shri Ram. They write on the tongue of the kid who is undergoing his Aksharabhyasa ceremony. After that, the first verse which is taught to him is this: Asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma mrityorma. This is what used to happen few years back. I don't even say few hundred years back. I would say it used to happen maybe 20 to 30 years back. Every child would be taught this particular thing, even in the textbook syllabus. If you see the vernacular textbook, that is the first verse which is written. Asato ma sadgamaya. And before they start doing anything, they chant this thing. Just imagine, a kid who doesn't understand what is Sat and Asat, he was taught this verse. What is Sat and what is Asat? Asatoma Sadgamaya. Now I am in a temporal situation. And what is my destination? My destination is Sat, eternal nature. So that is what Krishna speaks here. Like Prabhupada says, this is the beginning of Krishna's instruction. It is true, it is the beginning of any instruction for anybody who is born. That is the beginning. What is that? To see Sat Asat Bhedam, that is known as intelligence. Now we measure one's intelligence by his ability to score good marks in mathematics. We measure one's intelligence by his ability to answer some questions in the examinations, whether he is going to become a very good doctor or engineer or accounts, or his ability to cheat people, business, his ability to make more money, or his ability to extract enjoyment out of matter. That is how one's intelligence is measured generally in this world. We say, oh, he's a very intelligent person. What does it mean? Ultimately, he has the ability, or better ability than others, to extract some enjoyment out of matter. But according to Vedic system, intelligence is not measured in these areas. When a Veda says an intelligent person, it means that he has the ability to discriminate between good and bad, right and wrong, and especially the capacity to discriminate Sat Asat. That is called Viveka. Viveka means intelligence. Actually, the word intelligence cannot be translated as Buddhi, because intelligence means the practical application of Buddhi. That is called intelligence. So this practical application of Buddhi is called Viveka. Buddhi is a substance, but when the Buddhi is applied, the applied intelligence is known as Viveka. Viveka means what? Discrimination. That is why sometimes the word Tamasa Buddhi is used, and so many places is Buddhi is used. But when we say intelligence, it is actually the word equivalent to Sanskrit is Buddhi, is Viveka, sorry. Viveka means Sat Asat Bhedam, to discriminate between Sat and Asat. So now Krishna in this verse, that is what he talks about. He says, Na Sato Vidyate Bhavo, Na Bhavo Vidyate Sataha. First he talks about matter. Na Asataha Vidyate Bhavaha. Na means no. What is not there? Bhavaha. That means eternal nature or endurance is not there. For what that endurance is not there? For asataha, asatvastu. That means his body, material nature, this world. There is no eternity to this body. Body is going to be destroyed. But what is happening is this. People are putting all their efforts, the entire efforts. Actually in the hospital, I should not say. The entire efforts, the entire medical field, research is of what? To make this body permanent, isn't it? That is the whole effort. The OPD is how much? If you occupy one little space. But the maximum space, maximum endeavor is for what? Somehow or other, let the dying body be alive for some more time. Or some eternity should be injected into this temporary nature of this body. That is what ICU is all about. ICU is all about how to inject eternity to this temporary nature of this body. But it is not possible. It's impossible. That is why the Veda says that when somebody is almost on the level of about to die, Ayurveda says, at that time, just leave him. No medicines. There is only one medicine. Aushadam Janavi Toyam Vaidyu Narayana. At that time, there is only one medicine. What is that? Aushadam Janavi Toyam. That is why hospice came into picture. Now enough of injections. Now take Ganga Chandra and wait for your death. Sharire Jarjari Bhute Vyadikrasthe Tatapare. Aushadam Janavi Toyam Vaidyu Narayana Hari. At that time, there is no other alternative. Just accept Ganga Chandra and then accept Krishna as a supreme, as a doctor. Nobody can help. So, nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate satha. And for the soul, which is sataha, there is no question of any destruction. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. Na bhavo vidyate satha. For eternal nature, there is no question of any destruction. Soul cannot be destroyed. Now, there is another philosophy. There are so many people who are trying to destroy the soul. So, these mentalistic people, there are some kind of mentalistic people who talk about this philosophy. What is that philosophy? The philosophy is the soul will be destroyed. The soul is destroyed. So, there are some kind of mentalistic people who try to make matter eternal. There are some who try to make the soul destructive. So there are two kinds of mentalistic people. One kind of mentalistic people, what they think, somehow or other, whatever I have, I should have it, I should possess it, and I should go on enjoying it. And there are some people who say, no, do whatever you want, beg, borrow, or steal, and enjoy. Basmi bhutasya dehasya punar agam bhavet. How is it going to come back? Everything is going to be dead. Your soul is going to die. Just don't worry. Just enjoy. So, we have two kinds of materialistic people. One, those who are religious and those who are impious. So, those who want to give some permanent nature to this body, so they are religious people. And those who want to destroy the soul, who are they? Who think that the soul is destructive, it ends at the time of death, they are what? Irreligious people. So much of irreligious enjoyment, there is one called religious enjoyment, other is irreligious enjoyment. So this irreligious enjoyment and religious enjoyment comes out of these two concepts of ignorance. One concept of ignorance is what? Let us give permanent nature to body. Other is what? Let us give temporary nature to the soul. Because of these two kinds of ignorance, based of body and soul, they try to enjoy matter. But nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate ubhayoru pitrashtaha. Now Krishna says here, ubhayoru pitrashtaha, a person who is in knowledge, he sees both. What does he see? He sees both matter and spirit. And understands both of them. Ubhayoru pitrashtaha antastvanayos tattvadarshi. He is called tattvadarshi. Tattvadarshi means one who knows the truth. Tattvadarshinaha. This word Tattvadarshi comes in many places in the Bhagavad Gita and in many places in the scriptures. Tattva means truth. Darshi means to see. So one who sees the truth, you may see, what is the meaning of seeing the truth? Seeing the truth means understanding it and perceiving this world with that understanding. So some people say, what is this seeing the truth? Because intelligence of people have become so gross. If some statements like this are spoken, it is very difficult for people to digest. Recently, I had given a lecture on the same subject, saying that one who sees the truth, one person, after the lecture, he asked me, I want to know, what is this seeing the truth? What is seeing the truth? Then I had to go into detail and understand, explaining to him, like, you see an object in this world, that is what we see. No, though we see an object, actually we are not seeing that object. We are seeing the object through our understanding. Like for example, you have a computer. A villager would come and see the same thing and understand it to be a TV because he doesn't know what a computer is. So actually seeing, we are actually not seeing any object in this world. We are actually seeing through the understanding what we have. The objects what we are seeing are actually understood according to the knowledge what we have. So then I explained to him, so this is called seeing. Seeing means having knowledge. So when somebody has the knowledge of body and soul, then his perception about the world is totally different. Some people say, hey, you people speak something very, very different. You act different. Why? Because we see differently. How do we see? Through the eyes of knowledge. Pashyanti jnana chakshusha. That is what 15th chapter. Uttravantam stamva gunjanama gunanitam vimudhana anupashyanti. The same subject is spoken in the 15th chapter again by Krishna. He says, Utkramantam Sidam Vabi Bunjanam Vagunanvitam Vimudha Nanu Pashyanti. A fool doesn't see. And who can see? Pashyanti Jnana Chakshusha. One who has the eyes of knowledge, one who has worn the spectacles of knowledge, he can see. Like sometimes in the scripture we find everybody is blind. Somebody may think, what you are saying? I am able to see. What is everybody blind? Blind means that they are not able to see things as they are. That is called blindness. Actually, a blind man also sees. If you, most of the ophthalmologists may know, a blind man also sees. That is why he is able to understand. He is able to see so many things. He may not see a chair in front of it, but he knows. He actually sees a chair which is subtly there in his consciousness. And that is why he is able to understand so many things. Many of the blind people, you see, when they walk, they are more cautious than those who are wise. They are those who are wise. That means what? You may say they are not seeing, they are blind, but actually they are seeing. Why? Because they are trained to see a particular thing. In the same way, here also, seeing refers to what? Seeing refers to having the knowledge. Pashyanti jnana chakshusha. In the same way here, it is mentioned, tattva darshibihi, one who sees this truth, actually sees. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, Tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashtena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnanas tattva darshinaha. There also tattva darshinaha comes. So what is the meaning of tattva darshinaha there? It means one who has this knowledge or the intelligence or the viveka to discriminate between body and soul, sat and asat, he is a person whom you have to approach. If you want to know the truth, approach a person who knows the truth. Tadviddhi pranipatena. Pariprantena means what? Approach him. And then what? Pariprashtena. Enquire from him. Don't enquire from anybody and everybody. You should be very, very careful in where you are trying to get knowledge from. If you ask a person who is already ignorant, he will give you more ignorance. Tattva darshinaha. That is why it is explained, Tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashtena. Enquire from him. And then what? Hariprashtena, sevaya, serve him. What is the use of serving all these people in this world who are ignorant? By serving ignorant person, you will only be getting ignorance. That is why Krishna clearly says, Tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashtena seva upadekshantite jnanam. He can instruct you about what is knowledge, what is truth, because he has seen the truth. That is why Krishna, in the Vaisheshika Upanishad also, he explained, Vidyam Chandyam Chay, Yastad Vedo Bhayam Saha, Vidya Amritam Titva, Vidya Amritam Ashtate, Avidya Amritam Ashtate, Vidya Amritam Ashtate, Vidyam Chandyam Chay, Yastad Vedo Bhayam Saha, Avidya Amrityam Titva, Vidya Amritam Ashtate. Very important mantra from the Vaisheshika Upanishad. There also, this word two comes. What are the two things? Vidya and Avidya. So one should know both Vidya and Avidya. What is the meaning of Vidya? Vidya means spiritual knowledge. The knowledge of soul, Krishna, how we are all related to Krishna. Spiritual subject matter. And what is the meaning of Avidya? Avidya means spiritual understanding of matter. It is called Avidya. You may say, what is the spiritual understanding of matter? The spiritual understanding of matter is, this is temporary and is meant to give you misery. So knowledge about the body is not that it should not be understood. Yes, we should have the knowledge of the world. You should have the knowledge of the body. means what? The essential knowledge. Essential knowledge means it is temporary and it is miserable. And this knowledge of matter is the spiritual knowledge of matter. Some people say these spiritualists, they don't know about material knowledge. Actually, they have the best knowledge of matter. They have the right knowledge of matter. So, perception of knowledge in its proper perspective, understanding matter in its proper perspective, is the beginning of spiritual life. Some people have this idea, spiritual life is something very abstract. No. It is the most practical thing, because you analyze matter and know matter on its proper perspective. Srila Prabhupada, he went around the world preaching this verse. The greatest of the materialistic people, the scientists, everybody bowed down to him. And they are all appreciating the knowledge which Prabhupada had. And what did Prabhupada speak? He did his talk, Krishna dancing in Rasalila? No. He spoke about the interaction of matter and concluding how it is temporary, how it is going to give you misery. That's all. 80% of Prabhupada lectures, if anybody hears, even his conversation, the whole subject matter is not vidya, it is avidya. And what is the meaning of that? Avidya, proper understanding of matter. Some people think avidya means material knowledge. No. It is not material knowledge. It is knowledge about matter. The knowledge about matter, that avidya, vidyam, vidyam, avidyam, chastadvedo, bhayam saha, avidya mrityum means it is temporary. Tirtva, vidyaya amrutam ashtate, by practice of vidya, one attains what? Amrutam, eternal life. So, a devotee has complete knowledge. He may not be knowing the intricacies of how the body functions, but he knows the essential feature of the body and matter. What is that? It is temporary and it is going to give you misery. So, the description of how it is temporary, the description of how this material world is miserable and how it is temporary, that is a very important subject matter. Some kind of spiritualists are there. They try to neglect this aspect of spiritual knowledge. Just stay, talk about Krishna, talk about certain things which are very esoteric. And they totally forget of a very important aspect of spiritual knowledge, that is how this world is temporary and miserable. Because of that, they land up into illusory knowledge of spirituality. Even though they are talking about spirituality, but they land up into illusion. And they are technically known as sahajiyas. Why they are called sahajiyas? They think that what is the use of speaking the temporary nature of this world? What is the use of talking about this world is a miserable place? Let us just talk only on positive thing. One person was talking, let us only talk about positive thing. No. Krishna has explained, one of the important aspects of knowledge is this. Janma mrutyu jara vyadhi dukkha doshana darshanam. One of the aspects of the 19 aspects of, one of the 19 aspects of knowledge is this. Because until unless we are established in this particular field of knowledge, it is very difficult to go further. Like some people say, it is ABCD, it is beginning, but without that you cannot write poetry. If you don't write non-ABCD and you try to write poetry, it is foolishness. One who has learned ABCD nicely, with a proper phonetics, how to pronounce A, B, C properly, then he can be a very good poet. That is why some people may say, this is ABC. But ABC is not a joke. Actually, the whole of the first few years of education is siksha, it is phonetics. Now it's known as phonics. They have cut short the whole thing, phonics. They want to teach children phonics, how to pronounce A, B. The teacher herself doesn't know how to pronounce A. How does it pronounce B? The time has gone. They do all kinds of wrong pronunciations. They don't even pronounce properly what is A, B, C. They don't know. Even many other schools, they don't even teach children phonics. They teach something very higher. But what is the use of that? So in the same way here, Krishna is actually teaching in this verse the phonics of phonetics of spiritual life. Nasato vidyate bhavo. Na bhavo vidyate satha. Ubhayorupi drashtontas tvanayos tattva darshibhi. Then, in these two things, one is nasato vidyate bhavo, Other one is na bhavo vidyate sataha. Among these two things, Krishna in the next verse, that is the 17th verse, he talks about nasato na bhavo vidyate sataha. That is about the soul he speaks. Avinashi tad vidyat yena sarvaidam tadam vinasham avyasyasya na kaschit kartumam. See, he talks about the soul in the 17th verse. Soul means, that is how na vidyate sataha. Na bhavo vidyate sataha. Sataha means the soul. What is the nature of the soul? Avinashi. The first point about the soul is avinashi. Tu tad vidhi. He is using the word tu. Means he emphasizes the point, saying that this soul is, you know it, my dear Arjuna, as avinashi. And how can I understand this avinashi? How can I understand the soul is present? You can understand the presence of the soul by its all-pervading feature, by its consciousness. Tadvidhi yena sarvamidam tatam. Yena sarvamidam tatam. Yena. The word yena refers to the body. And what is the meaning of yena sarvamidam tatam? In this body, the soul is pervading. How is it pervading? It is pervading through consciousness. This consciousness is there, which is actually the symptom of the soul. Or we can say it is a light emanating from the soul. Like you have the bulb. The bulb is at one place and the consciousness is, or the light is spreading everywhere. Like you have one bulb, it is spreading its light throughout the room. In the same way, the soul is there in the region of the heart, and from there the consciousness is pervading throughout the body. Yena sarvamidam tatam. And then he says, vinasham avyasyasya na kaschit kartrum arhasi. That is why, my dear Krishna, Arjuna, no one is able to destroy the imperishable soul, so you have this knowledge. That which pervades the entire body, you should know it to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. Na kaschit kartrum arhasi. Nobody can do that. Nobody can destroy the soul. Now let us talk something on consciousness. We just now spoke about soul, but we'll talk about consciousness. Now this consciousness is a very interesting thing. Very interesting. This consciousness is the thing which makes us feel pleasure and pain in this world. All the feelings are because of the presence of consciousness. Even the great scientists are also amazed seeing this consciousness, observing this consciousness. And they don't have any knowledge about it. But still they have to speak something about it. So they say, this consciousness is the highest grade of matter. They also categorize consciousness in the category of matter. They say, when the chemicals, they interact with each other, and the combination of the chemicals reaches to a certain level of complexity, then it gives rise to conscious symptoms. They speak something very complicated, so that, you know, if you cannot convince, confuse. Big formula. So, if they are confused, so they express their confusion in a very complicated way, so that people read that and don't understand. If they don't understand, they cannot say, we do not understand. So they should say, wow, wonderful, excellent. That's what it is. So if you say, I'm confused, you say, what is this, you're confused. That is, Arjuna, he told, I am confused to Krishna. Rather, actually he was not confused. Arjuna is such a great personality. He was acting as if he is confused because of Krishna's will. But these people who are actually confused, they say, it's very clear. It's very clear. What is clear? Nothing is clear. Actually, when death comes, that is the time when they understand, nothing is clear. So, this consciousness, according to them, is made up of material elements. But no, this consciousness is not made up of material elements. It is not made up of any of the elements in the periodic table. If you open the third standard textbook, science textbook, first, it will be written in the first line, whatever you find in this world is matter, nothing else other than matter. Just imagine how much ignorance has been drilled into the consciousness of the children. Then, when they go on studying this, when they come to, say, 8th standard, 9th standard, then it is very difficult to tell them about soul, body and all, because they have been taught for so many years hours and hours they drill this knowledge, has been drilled into them to their examination, to the pressure of the parents, in so many different ways. This ignorance has been drilled. So it's very difficult to get them out of this ignorance. Very difficult. That is why those who have not gone to these schools and colleges, if you go and talk about matter and spirit, if you say that Indra gives rain, no problem. But if you go and tell an educated, so-called educated boy or a girl, Indra gives rain, what is Indra gives rain? What you are speaking? You are speaking something mythology. That is what it would say. Huh? So coming back to this point of consciousness, the whole science, modern science, can be completely proved false if somebody proves the existence of consciousness. That is why Srila Prabhupada, he was pressing on this point. Where is the study of consciousness? And that is why he called his dear disciple, His Holiness Swarup Damodar Maharaj, and told, you take this project. That is called Bhaktivedanta Institute. And this whole purpose of this Bhaktivedanta Institute is to prove to those scientists that consciousness is non-material. Just one small point to prove that Prabhupada, he told, this Jew guest house is just meant for this. Invite scientists around the world and prove to them this point that there is something beyond matter. But you have to explain to them in their own language. So some devotees, they actually go to their study and get the PhDs and then try to speak in their own language of how consciousness exists. So somehow or the other, they have come to some conclusion. Yes, there is something beyond matter. Something beyond matter. But still, it is very difficult for them to accept that what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita is true. So this consciousness is such a thing. Of course, we can speak so much about consciousness many places, but here, yena sarvavidam tatam vinasham avyasyasya na kaschit kartum arhasi. Now, comes to the next verse. Antavanti me deha nityasyukta sharirnaha anashino aprameyasya tasmad udyasya bharata. Krishna says that this material body of the indescriptible, immeasurable living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight for the descendant of Bharata. Now here, Krishna talks about body. That is in the 18th and the 19th verse. These two verses, Krishna talks about nasato vidyate bhavaha. He explains this point. Nasato vidyate bhava means what? For something which is material, for asat, there is no question of any endurance. It is going to die. That is why he says, antavant ime deha nityaha uttas charirinaha anashino prameyasya tasmal dhasva bharata. Now, here, while talking about the body, Krishna says that this body in which the soul is living. And what is the nature of the soul which is living in the body? That is anashinaha aprameya. We know that soul is indestructible. Now here Krishna says it is aprameya. Now let us know what is the meaning of aprameya. Now everybody says, oh, my soul. It's in the region of the heart. Nobody can say my soul. That is the hand naturally goes here. Nobody says my soul. Isn't it? They don't point out the legs and say my soul. Isn't it? When I say I, it goes here. It doesn't even go to the face. They're very natural. Why? Because the soul is in the region of the heart. Now, if the soul is in the region of the heart, let me do the operation. Like we have cardiac department open now. Let us go open the heart and then see the soul and show to everyone this is the soul. It doesn't work like that. Because the soul is immeasurable. Now, the Upanishads gives the measurement of the soul. The Upanishads talk that the soul is 1/10,000 part of the tip of the head. Balagrashita bhagasya shatatat kalpitasya. If you take the tip of the head, then cut it into 100 parts. And then from that 100 part, you take it again and cut it to 100 parts. So that 1/10,000th part, that is the size of the soul. But even then, if that is the size of the soul, why does Krishna say aprameyasya? Aprameya means something which cannot be measured. Now, if soul cannot be measured, why the measurement is given? One place Krishna says aprameya. Now here the measurement of the soul is given. Why? Because sometimes in scriptures the presentation is in a very very mystical way. The presentation is little bit in such a way that people will really understand. If you just tell the soul is immeasurable, what will happen? Ah, soul is immeasurable. It doesn't go deep into the consciousness. But if you tell the soul is, you know, 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair, that is also will not go into the consciousness. If you say, you see the hair, the tip of the hair, people say, yes, yes. You cut it into 100 parts. And in that 100 part, take it. Again, you cut it into 100 parts. It is so small. Then people think, ah, is it so? Then understand this. So if you just tell, if you want to describe somebody, very beautiful. If he says, oh, she is very beautiful, it doesn't affect so much. You know, Miss Universe, ah, very beautiful. She is a donkey in front of her. If you tell something like that, in direct way, then it will have more effect. Then Krishna starts the Bhagavad Gita like that also. If you tell, oh Arjuna, my dear fool, it doesn't work like that. What does he say? Asochyan, susastam, prajnyavadam, shibhasti. Gatasu, nagatasu, shte, nanu, sochyant, pandita. Oh Arjuna, intelligent people, knowledgeable people, panditas, they don't think like what you are thinking. Same thing he told, you are a fool, but he told it in a indirect way. Always description of something indirect, describing something indirectly has more effect than describing something directly. So that is why Upanishads, they take the indirect way of expressing the immeasurability of the soul. As much as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair is immeasurable, in the same way the soul is also immeasurable. The soul is as immeasurable as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. When the Upanishads are giving the dimension of the soul as 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair, they are not giving the dimension. They are actually talking about the immeasurability only, which Krishna is expressing here. He says, Aprameyasya. That is why, my dear Arjuna, Tasmat Uddhas Yuddhasva Bharata. Because Dantavantu Ime Deha, this body is going to be destroyed. Even if you shoot an arrow at Bhishma, you cannot kill Bhishma. If you don't kill Bhishma, you don't think Bhishma will not die, still he will die. Whether you kill him or don't kill him, he will die. Even if you want to kill him, you cannot kill him. In another sense, Krishna is using both knowledge of body and soul. He says, my dear Arjuna, you are thinking I am going to kill Bhishma, you cannot kill him. You are thinking that Bhishma will die if I kill him, he will not die. Even if you want to protect him, still you cannot protect him. Body is going to be destroyed. So in different ways, Krishna is using all his logic to convince Arjuna that how you had to fight. The last verse we'll do for today. Yayenam vetyantaram ischenam mantehatam uvoto navjanito nayam hanti nahanyate. Because a soul neither hanti nor dies, nahanyate, nor it kills. So this is an important subject matter. We just stop here. Why? Because nayam hanti nahanyate. Krishna, he puts a bomb here to Arjuna. He says, ubhavato vijanito nayam hanti nahanyate. The soul neither kills nor is killed. Because Krishna, Arjuna was thinking, oh, okay, Bhishma doesn't die, but I'll be the cause of his death. Krishna says, no. Neither Bhishma will die, neither you can kill him, or neither you have killed him. Neither the soul kills, nor it is killed. So how is it that the soul neither kills, nor is killed? Soul is not killed, that we understood. But soul neither kills. For example, Arjuna takes an arrow and shoots at Bhishma, and Bhishma dies. And everybody says, Arjuna did not kill Bhishma. How blatant lie it is. Somebody takes a gun and shoots. Police comes and arrests him. He says, no, I did not kill. Hey, you have killed, you have proof, read Bhagavad Gita. He said in the Bhagavad Gita, the soul neither is killed nor kills. In both cases, I have shot him. What has happened? The body died. He did not die. So you cannot arrest me. Even if you think that I have killed him, the soul doesn't kill him. So you cannot arrest me. Even if you want to arrest me, you can arrest me. You can only put, what is it called? Janjeer on my hands, not to my soul. So many confusions come out of the theory of soul that Krishna further clears in the next few verses. So I will stop here. Any questions? We need time. Yes. Yes. See, detachment is a state of consciousness. And now, how you manifest that detachment, that is different. So just because somebody is doing certain duties in this world, you cannot say attached. Just because somebody is not doing the duties, you cannot say he is detached. Like Arjuna, he did not want to fight. Can you say Arjuna was detached? No. So nobody can tell that somebody is detached or attached by his external activity. Okay. Because detachment and attachment is a state of consciousness. Isn't it? To the extent of or the realization of the temporary nature of this world, to that extent we develop detachment. Now detachment to matter doesn't mean aversion to matter. Srila Prabhupada, once he told, if somebody gives me money, I'll take it like this. Put his hands like this, I'll take it like this. Somebody may think, what is this? A sannyasi talking like this? Isn't it? So that doesn't mean Prabhupada is not detached from money. So one cannot judge a person's consciousness by his external activity. In the second chapter itself, Krishna, when he has finished his talk about karma yoga, buddhi yoga, then Arjuna asks him a question. Siddha prajnyasya ka bhasha, siddha kim prabhasheta, kim asita prajeta kim. He asks four questions. When he asks his four questions about siddha prajna, then Krishna answers them. Kim asita vrajeta, how does he walk? Everything has got a subtle meaning. It is not that how does the prajna walk. Suppose there is a person who doesn't have legs. Can he not be siddha prajna? Walk doesn't there means how does he engage his senses? Means how, what is the state of his consciousness? We want to know what it is. So to the extent of a realization of the temporary nature of matter, to that extent detachment is there. Now here, knowing means what? Knowing means realizing. Now your question is, okay, I know, but how to realize? That is your question. Now realization of the temporary nature of matter happens only when we act on that platform. See, people generally outside, those who are there, so-called scholars in Upanishads and Gita, they differentiate between knowledge and matter. They say matter is different, knowledge is different and activity is different. Karma and jnana. They say do different things. No. You can only do something when you know. Suppose, for example, surgery. If you don't know how to do surgery, you cannot do it. So, actions can only perform when there is knowledge. And the knowledge which doesn't translate into action has no value. So karma and jnana both go together. Now here we are talking about karma, jnana. I know. I know that this material world is temporary. Now how to realize that? Only when I act on that knowledge. So these actions based on that knowledge will make us realize, will make us realize the knowledge. So realization doesn't happen just by knowing. When we act on the platform of the knowledge, then realization happens. Now for example, you have heard the Bhagavad Gita class. You know this material world is temporary. this house is temporary, the family is temporary. So you go to your house, you tell your wife, children, everyone, this house is temporary, you are all temporary, so I'll just go. I'll just go. So now, you go for 2 days, then you don't get your proper food, again you come back. Forget this temporary paternity jacket. With them I am getting food, to some food, somebody to talk to, isn't it? Why? Because you know, but you are not realized it. Okay, now you go there, you think this world is temporary, everything is temporary, and these people around me, they are all temporary. So what I should do now? I should now act on this knowledge. How will I act on this knowledge? This money, what are you thinking? That I kept it in the bank, thinking that it's going to help me. Any day, the rupee may devalue, everything will last. So better use it. Paropakara ivartham, let it be used for others. For spreading Krishna consciousness. This house, anyway it is temporary, anyway it's going to, as long it is there, let it be used in Krishna service. These family members, I don't know, today they are there, tomorrow they may not be there. As long as they are there, let them be engaged in Krishna service. So, knowledge is there. You are acting on that knowledge. So, by doing so, what will happen? A realization will come. I am telling you, this world is actually a laboratory. When you go into the laboratory, chemistry laboratory, you go. You try to do some experiments without knowledge, what will happen? All kinds of gases will come. It will be a big mess, isn't it? But you do the experiments of all the things with knowledge, what will happen? Wonderful things will happen. The same way, wherever you are, that is a laboratory given to you by Krishna. So based on the information, knowledge you got, you act. So when you act on the basis of the information you get, what happens? That translates into, the knowledge translates into realization. That's what it is. Okay. Yes.
When you were talking about the chemical origin of consciousness, as explained by the scientists,
yeah,
that is a combination of matter, chemicals, and then it just begins to show symptoms.
Yeah.
Now in medicine we have those drugs also, psychotropic drugs before them. These are again chemicals, but when given, they can alter a person's consciousness.
Yeah, nice question.
So how is that that this matter is linked with consciousness?
Nice question. So I'll just go a little bit deep. Your question is a little bit technical. Let me explain the question. So there are some drugs used by the psychiatrist and others for like anesthetist, which actually, what this do? It actually reduces the consciousness. Means makes a person unconscious. Actually, it is not affecting the consciousness. The consciousness is perceived by us through matter. For example, consciousness is perceived through matter means I have hands. So, when I touch something, what will happen? Oh, I feel cold. Cold water, I touch, you feel cold. Now, there are two things here. The consciousness and the muscles, the what is the system? Nervous system and all this thing, okay? Consciousness and nervous system. Now, consciousness is perceiving the cold water through the nervous system. When you give the injection, consciousness is not affected. The nervous system is affected. So the instrument of the consciousness to perceive, that has failed. Now, there are eyes, and there is a computer. Now, a person becomes disturbed when there is the hardware failure or software failure in the computer. Person becomes disturbed. So this disturbance of the consciousness is because of a failure of the hardware or the software of the computer. Now you cannot say that the hardware or the software has directly in touch with this consciousness. No, it is not. So by giving some injections so that the cells of the nervous system, they become inert for some time. External perception, what is there? Oh, consciousness. We have made him unconscious. No, the consciousness is still there. But the instrument of consciousness has been made dead for some period of time. Take for example, person in coma. According to medical science, a person in coma is 100% unconscious. That doesn't mean there is no consciousness. If there is no consciousness, why didn't you declare him dead? If he is 100% unconscious, why you don't declare him dead? Consciousness is there, but the body is not projecting that consciousness through its cells. Like for example, a tube light. You put a red cover on it, the whole room becomes red color. And then you put a black paper on it, thick black paper. Now you say, the bulb is off. The bulb is not giving light. No. The bulb is still giving light. Because the covering is thick black paper. That is the thing. In the same way, as long as a person is alive, he is having consciousness. But the instruments through which the consciousness is perceived by us, that has been made dead by the injections. Because this is made up of some chemicals, and the consciousness is not made up of chemicals, they just cannot interact. Chemicals can only affect chemicals. Chemicals cannot affect something which is so subtle, which is sukshma, which is not made up of chemicals. That's what we can say. So best example is in medical science only. You give a local anesthesia. That means what? Consciousness is there in another part of the body. Exactly at that place it is not there. That means what? You have made that part insensitive for projecting the influence of consciousness to you. That is how it is. Like somebody is walking in the road. He has eyes, everything is there. Okay? He is opening consciousness. But his consciousness is somewhere. He falls in a big ditch. So what has happened? Even though eyes are there, everything is there, but the consciousness is not pervading through the eyes to see the whole. So forget about anesthesia. He has got different kind of anesthesia. He is watching a movie and he watched the movie. So that is also an anesthesia. It is not that only when you give the injection, there is anesthesia. Pediatrics. The doctor has to give injection. Nurse, she talks to the baby or talks to the small boy. Then he starts crying. So that is anesthesia. Isn't that anesthesia? Only injection is anesthesia. What? For some people, even though they give injection, they don't go unconscious. So it happened with me many years back. Krishna Prem Prabhu is there? He's not here. Once he did an operation to me, because as a new devotee, only like 98, 99, he's my very close friend. So he called that, it pains a lot, we have to give you anesthesia. I told you, give. So anesthesia came and gave injection here. It was a toe, it was because the nails very pained a lot because of that water and all, it became a lot of pus and all. So anesthesia gave an injection, only the toe will be. Then he started cutting and all these things. He told, are you feeling the pain? He told, yes, I'm feeling the pain. He called anesthesia, told, why don't you give one more? She told, I cannot give. He told, this injection is so powerful, for at least 6 hours somebody should be having. I told, what to do? Maybe it's hypersensitive. Like that. Okay, any more questions? Yeah, last question.
Like you said, consciousness is externally manifested through sex objects or
perceived. Yeah.
But similarly, like to improve our consciousness or to become Krishna conscious, we are chanting, we are hearing.
Yeah.
These are also external
activities.
External.
Very good.
So, these external
activities
are taken away.
Yeah.
Then is there a possibility to improve the consciousness?
Nice question. So, let us come back to the roots of the question. Said by chanting, by doing these external activities, we become Krishna conscious, means consciousness is changed. Now here, we should go deep into the Vaishnava philosophy and say that how these external activities are not changing your consciousness. These activities are not external. How? Atha Sri Krishna namadi nabhavigrahyam indriyaihi. What is the meaning of this? Anybody knows? Atha Sri Krishna namadi nabhavet grahyam indriyaihi. By senses, we cannot become Krishna conscious. Let us say, Atha Sri Krishna namadi, it's a very long explanation for that. Krishna and related to Krishna's things cannot be perceived by senses. By senses, indriyaihi. Clear? Now after that, what is the next part of the verse? Sevon ukehi jivhado swayamevahi smrityadaha. Now, when you start serving through your senses, starting from jivha, jivha ado, that service, that is subtle. Activity is one thing. The intention behind the activity is what? Other thing. That is service. If it is done as a service, seva, then swayamevahi smrityahada, automatically the consciousness becomes Krishna conscious. So, it is not actually by chanting we become Krishna conscious. When we engage our tongue in service of Krishna by chanting, then we become Krishna conscious. So when we engage our tongue, when we use that, when somebody says Krishna, without the mood of service, without the intention of doing serving the Lord, because of the superior potency of Krishna, he gets a sukruti, but that cannot be called as bhakti. Bhakti is the thing which is done in the mood of service. That changes the consciousness. That purifies the consciousness. The other thing is Krishna's exclusive mercy, special mercy which that person gets because of chanting his name. Because he has chanted Krishna's name, whether he wanted to or not. But Krishna took it as the name. For Krishna it is his name only. But for this person, that can be anybody's. Isn't it? So now, we become Krishna conscious because of service. Sevon mukhehi jivhado. So now, suppose somebody doesn't have external senses. Tongue falls from dumb, deaf, lame. No senses are there, are working. Then how can he be Krishna conscious? That is what your question, isn't it? Second question. Now, even though you don't have any senses, still you can serve. Because as I have told, senses are distinct from service. Senses are distinct from service. So what is more important? Service is important. Suppose somebody is deaf, dumb, and he doesn't have hands and legs. Still he can become 100% Krishna conscious. Because Krishna consciousness being totally spiritual, it is not dependent on one's materialistic situation. In any situation, in every situation, a person can become Krishna conscious. Because Krishna consciousness is service. A dumb person still can hear about Krishna. A blind person can see Krishna. A lame person also can serve Krishna. How? Because for that you need to know a little bit of Sankhya. What you are seeing externally, these are all sense instruments. They are not the senses. This is not eye, this is eyeball. The real eye is where? In the mind. You may see amoeba. Amoeba also have five senses. Did you say it doesn't have hands, legs, nose, ears? It's just this thing. But still, all the senses are there in a subtle form. To give an example, a cow. Does a cow have a hand? But what do you do with the hand? If I give something, you take it from the hand. But when you give something to the cow, how does it take? That means the cow has its hand in the mouth. Isn't it? Because hand is not the hand which you see actually. The functioning of a particular thing, that is called hand. The functionality is called the hand. Suppose you have a fracture and somebody is tied. Though you have a hand, you cannot take anything. Isn't it? So ultimately, hand is called hand because of its functionality. Huh? Like for example, this is a mobile. But if I get angry on someone and throw it, he threw an object on me, it becomes a weapon. Isn't it? So we name a particular thing based on its functionality, based on its function. So the function of the hand is present still in the cow. The same way, for a blind man, the function of eye is in the stick, is in the hand, is in the skin. Actually, it is in the skin. If the stick, he just goes like this, like this, like this, he can make out. His eye is in the skin. So ultimately, eye is in the skin means eye is there in the consciousness, in the subtly in the mind. It is there. So that's how we can understand. Okay, we stop here now. Harish.